You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.
She's got moxie, and she knows how to use it. Your late night highly caffeinated host, the one and only smoking Argus, Allison Brinker.
And welcome to the second hour of the Allison Brinker Show. I'm trying to do 10 things at once. I'm so sorry. I have Raymond Powell coming up here shortly. He is the co-founder, you may remember, of Ron Paul Revolution back in 2008. He is the owner of Revolution Broadcasting. He was the owner of Revolution Broadcasting. Go away, I don't want to upgrade. God bless America. He was the owner from 2008 to 2010. He's currently founder of the New Dawn Project in New Mexico, an intentional community, and head geek at startbutton.com. We are going to be joined here shortly. Hopefully I can actually get this call to go through. I think Skype was probably just overloaded from the last hour conversation. I think we have him on the line. Ray Powell, are you with us on the Allison Brinker Show?
I am here, Allison. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. I got to pod you down because you're louder than Howard was. Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Well, do what you got to do.
I think we're all set. So now what are we going to talk about tonight? Tell me about the New Dawn Project. I think I've seen a couple. Before we get into the myth of liberty, I want to talk about a little bit about the New Dawn Project. I've seen a couple posts on dailypaul.com.
Okay. I'd love to talk to you about that. But first, can we talk about your previous guest
As long as it's civil, yeah, don't call names or whatever. I mean, look,
one thing. I mean, it's a real quick argument that you didn't get a chance to make, when he's saying that we have a legitimate government. I mean, this, by all legal, lawful standards, this government was constituted by the Constitution. And so the moment you stop executing under that it's a charter agreement, you no longer exist. It's that simple. Your organization is invalid from that point forward, and it's that simple to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And again, I mean, the writ of habeas corpus, it's in black and white, or scroll, pen, and parchment, cannot be suspended unless the country's in open rebellion. This is right in the document. This isn't even a power that's granted to Congress or whichever branch or blah, blah, blah. This is like one of those, it's like one of the few things, hey, you can't ever do this. And the government is literally doing that now. So I totally agree with what you're saying. If you're not abiding, if it's not any more obvious by the fact that you're now wantonly killing whoever you want, when you want, wherever you want, then how could it possibly be legitimate?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. All those points are on top of the one that says your founding document defines how you operate, and when you fail to operate along lines with your founding document, then you're no longer a chartered organization. You don't exist. So it's that simple to me.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Well, I'm glad I'm not alone here in decrying that the U.S. government is illegitimate.
Right. Absolutely. That's a fact. And so are probably most governments, but that's neither here nor there.
Right. But I don't care about those because I don't live in their under their jurisdiction or claimed jurisdiction.
There you go.
So tell me about New Dawn.
New Dawn Project is an intentional community. And at first, you know, when I tell people that such a project exists, they go, oh, what, a commune? And, you know, I say, okay, it's something along those lines. But, you know, I just don't like that word because it has too many, connotations back to the old 60s, 70s, where it's a bunch of naked people running around getting high and stuff. So we're not that, but we are an intentional community.
And what does intentional community mean?
That means that we come together with intention to live together and be part of each other's lives and work and live together. And in that, we try to look for the common core principles that we share and live under those. So, and some of those include things like getting off the grid, trying to be as self-sufficient as possible. And some of those include, taking personal responsibility for yourself and first and foremost. And looking to benefit the community and not drain it, at the same time you're looking out for yourself.
Well, on that point, the first thing that comes to mind is now, is this kind of like a William Bradford intentional community, or is our private property rights respected and extolled?
Well, the thing with this current phase of the project is that it's only 2.5 acres. It's in the hills near Albuquerque, New Mexico. It's really a neat place to kind of experiment with some of these things. The ultimate goal is to make a much bigger project, what I call phase two of the project, which is going to be at least 40 acres, probably a little further down south in New Mexico, on some really beautiful and affordable land that we can just make into a really, really terrific spot. But there in that version of the phase two, what's going to happen is people will have their own slice of land that is theirs. And so the community becomes a lot more like a neighborhood association or something at that point. In this current phase, it's a little more complicated. And that
right
we all
on,
kind of have,
right on, Ray, because really, yeah. Shouldn't the neighborhood association be about the top tier of government?
Exactly.
The neighborhood, if it's outside of the jurisdiction of the neighborhood association, then it doesn't need to be done.
No, amen. I agree. And, you know, I've spent so much time, you know, as you know, Allison, in the past, and like we all are still kind of working at these global and federal issues and things. But, you know, the real answer seems to be to me, if we can all just step back and say, you know what, if we just take our power back by being so self-sufficient and learning to get along with each other without the interventions of these political bodies, we have already won. And it's over without a fight.
Absolutely. But now you're saying you want to go further south in New Mexico. Now, I'm a Midwesterner, or typically we're concerned with called flyover country, but we are very lush. We are, you know, the breadbasket of this country. Is it New Mexico? How desert-like is it? And can you really be self-sufficient in the form of water in a climate like New Mexico?
Well, that's a great question, and the answer is absolutely yes. It does become the single primary concern when you're considering this area of the country, though. So what you can do in terms of digging wells, there is plenty of water down there. Sometimes you've got to go 500 to 800 feet. My current well is about 800, but I'm in the hills now where I am. But on top of that, you can't even count on that. So you really have to be serious about your catchment, and you have to be very, very...
All right, you just used a word that I have no idea. What is a catchment?
Oh, catchment is rainwater catchment. So
okay.
Every drop that falls out of the sky, you need to catch as much as you possibly can, and you need to have the facilities to store that for... You got to look at the possibility of needing to store tens of thousands of gallons of water for maybe up to 10 or 15 years at a time, if you really want to get through some of the droughts. So yeah, the answer is yes. It's doable, but you're very right in that water is a main concern in this area of the country.
So is that like, now you're in phase one, is this kind of what you guys have been working on the most, like trying to figure out how to be able to have these storage tanks to hold this much water?
I wouldn't say we're quite even there to the planning phase of phase two. We're really still constructing the actual consensus board that is going to run the communal areas, the co-owned areas, I should say. You know, that's really a time where we are going out to the current property in terms of getting together to discuss these things and doing some testing on what it's like to actually live in this way, getting to know each other really well. And that's a process that's got its ups and downs for sure. As we really learn to fine tune who and what qualities of people are we looking for, at least am I, as kind of the principal founder, what am I compatible with in terms of bringing people around that are then mutually compatible with me so that we can get a real core structure built. And you know, that's a very tricky process, especially when we don't have those areas of separation with the private property. So it's almost kind of like a catch-22 that's happening. But newdawnproject.org is the web address. And anybody who's potentially interested in kind of going through this process of discovery, I totally welcome their input and go to the website and get in touch.
How many people are – did you call it the communal board or the community board? How many people are involved at this point?
Well, at the moment, it's still just me on the actual consensus board, and I am looking forward to the day with so much of an open heart to the day I can bring other people into that. But it's you know, the thing is, Allison, it's a decision that has to be made, because once you're in, there's no way to get you out. Okay, that's how much of a commitment it is. Once you are part of what I'm considering the consensus board. Now, operating by consensus is its own trick and its own line of study, and I've been working with some of the top experts in what that's about, but it's a very slow process, at least it can be at times. And so for a lot of, you know, kind of go-getter libertarian types, it can be a little bit of a difficult transition to comprehend how we have to operate there, but it really causes people to have to look deep within themselves, be honest with themselves, and be honest with those around you in terms of learning to get along and communicate and make things happen.
Right on. Now, Ray, we're coming up to a break here in probably 30-some. Oh, no, we have about a minute. So have you spoken to – and there went my headphones. Have you spoken to anyone over at the Citadel? Have you looked over at the Citadel Project? What is that, in Idaho? Or have you do outreach to these other communal kind of projects that – or the Free State Project out in New Hampshire?
Oh, absolutely. Well, Free State Project is pretty different. That's not a specific property. Of course, that's the whole state. And I've been in networking with many other similar projects. There are so many out there, Allison. It's unbelievable. So I encourage anybody who, kind of has ideas about just leaving the American paradigm to research intentional communities. We've had as many as 15 people out at the current property where I'm at, so the doors are open there. And there's 1,000 other projects out there. They really are, and a lot of them people just don't know about.
Did you get a chance? Have you spoken, or do you know about the Citadel?
I'm not familiar with that one.
I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know they're going to have it's going to be kind of a communal living, and then they're going to have a main Citadel to fall back to if they were ever invaded. We're speaking with Ray Powell here on the Allison Bricker Show. That was my tongue that made that noise, I promise. We'll be right back after this short commercial timeout. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks so much for sticking around here. You're listening to the Allison Bricker Show, and I am, of course, your host, Allison Bricker, here broadcasting every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 7 to 9 on Daily Paul Radio. If you would like to add your voice to the conversation, you should call up, and you will have a chance to air your opinion. Right now, we're speaking to Raymond Powell. He is a fellow DailyPaul.com member. Ray, before we went to the break, we were kind of talking about the Citadel. And I don't know how much progress they have, but what is your time span or your timeline of having the first group of people in New Dawn?
Sorry, Allison, I was muted.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
All right.
No problem.
Yeah, sorry about
that. I thought
that.
Maybe you were busy chatting in the secret DP party chat room on Skype.
Right. Well, we have so much fun in there. Absolutely.
I know.
You know. we've had lots of groups of people out there come and grow, various different kind of vibes and approaches to how things work there. And it hasn't become a permanent fit yet. And in terms of anybody that I'm going to invite on the permanent board, but the property is there. If people are looking to just kind of bail out, I'm tired of hustling all day long, working for the man, and I'd really like this to try a different lifestyle. It is there. It is available. There is an application online that you can fill out and check it out. And, just maybe you'll be that first person who really just – it seems like you're getting it on all the levels it needs to, and you can find yourself in a position where you can be part of this thing. Within a year or two, we're looking to, for sure, move on to phase two. The beautiful thing is that the current property is owned free and clear. The idea is that if we can – kind of get this just operational or continue the operations with the minimal livestock that is there and expand a little bit and keep the gardening going and kind of do some alternative building structures. Some projects of which are underway. We can really turn this thing around for 75, 100 grand. And that is all the money that we need to get into phase two. So it really is a viable potential here for those that have said motivation to get involved.
So you're in Ernie Hancock's territory, you're in that same location. And I know he does some of that kind of stuff that off the grid. Have you reached out to him at all?
I haven't talked to Ernie probably since 2009 when we went down to Jekyll Island, of all places.
Oh, were you at the Jekyll Island thing? That got me.
Yeah, I was there.
That
yes,
was
I'm...
the last time that I bashed somebody in the Liberty Movement and got me all kinds of flack. That whole notion of Bob. Look, I love the work that Bob's done, but making sure that no journalists were allowed to cover the events, kind of a boneheaded move.
I get it. I don't know if people understood that what Bob Scholes were talking about, of
Correct.
Course, a founder of We the People Foundation. Yeah, and he has done amazing, amazing work. He is so underappreciated for the work he's done.
He is.
Nobody even knows his story. I think he's working on memoirs or something because he needs to get it published. The stuff he's done is just – he's got at least 10 mind-blowing stories. But anyway, his goal in the Jekyll Island Project, and this was in 2009 where we all convened. We met in New York, I guess – it was Terry. No, Terry. Where is the original station where the supposed infamous train ride?
Somewhere in Pennsylvania? Or was it New? God, I don't remember.
Hoboken, New Jersey.
Oh, okay. New Jersey. That's right.
Yeah. So we went to Hoboken, and the train station, the closest train station to the original, is just this little rundown. You know, it barely even operates. It was great, and so we all convened there. You know, Michael Badnarik and G. Edward Griffin and Bob Schulz and so many awesome people. I was just honored to even be invited, actually. But anyway, so we took the train down all the way down to Jekyll Island, Georgia. We met in the original hotel that was owned by
that was one of the Rockefellers.
Yeah. So, and I'm not sure who owns it currently, but we met there and we actually convened in the conference room that was called the Federal Reserve Room to plot the demise of the Federal Reserve. So it was fun times. And then Adam Kokesh and Catherine Bleich and a bunch of people conquered the hotel by climbing up on top of a probably 4-story roof, bringing down the flag and putting up the Gadsden flag in its place. It was beautiful.
You know, Taryn Lupo, who's on, him and Brian Hagan, they host a show before mine, Liberty Cats. I first met Taryn because he snuck in and he was the only guy that was able to sneak in and get recorded footage that he posted to YouTube. Because I remember talking to Bob's assistant and I was like, why are you banning new media from covering the event? And it was just, I just thought it was really ridiculous. But then the next year he did that Continental Congress thing and somebody nominated me to be one of the delegates, but then I never even went.
Oh, awesome. Well, yeah, I was an alternative delegate myself, but that was the thing. That was the point I was getting ready to make when I went off on telling stories about how fun it was, is that it was supposed to be a planning session for the launch of the kind of campaign to create Continental Congress 2009. It wasn't something, there's going to be things discussed there. It wasn't really meant for public consumption, you know, and that was Bob's concern. And I understand where you're coming from too. I remember at the time, a couple of people were trying to cover it and it was like, you know, I wouldn't have minded anything I was saying or anything I heard said going public, but you know, Bob wanted to use it as more of a kind of movement planning session. So he didn't necessarily want the so-called bad guys to have to know exactly what we were up to, I guess.
Right on. Well, I remember looking on the page and I was nominated to be a delegate. And then the guy that's now Bernard von Nothaus, who sold the Ron Paul Liberty dollars, was the other delegate. And then the feds raided him literally mere months before the Continental Congress took place. And that was in Illinois. And so Indiana was without any delegates.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I didn't know that actually. I thought all 50 states were represented there.
Well, maybe there was an alternate or something, but I don't know who. Yeah. There was nobody listed on the page as an alternate.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know.
Maybe I guess that each state was supposed to have 3 delegates. Maybe they were a short one.
Possibly, but see, then nothing ever came of that. And I know that was a huge undertaking that he managed to pull off, but I mean.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that because actually something did come of it. It's called the Articles of Freedom, and it's fairly well written and documented about what it's called. You know, the actual full title is The Articles of Freedom, The Complete Works of Continental Congress 2009. The site has been down for possibly years, and it's interesting of the timing of this because actually Bob just contacted me a few weeks ago to help him get that site back up, which it is now. So,
that's good because he had contacted me in 2010 and wanted me to do something in the state of Indiana, the Constitution Centers or something that he was talking about setting up.
Yeah, his latest plan is absolutely genius, as are most of his plans. For whatever reason, he needs some help with the kind of creating the activist organization that's required to make some of this stuff happen. I'm doing everything I can when it comes to helping him on the website through my web design firm. But at the end of the day, it requires him to kind of learn new tricks. I think he is kind of an old dog. God bless his heart.
Right on. Well, some of our best, some of the best spokespeople in the liberty movement are old dogs. I mean, Ron Paul, he's, 77 now? I mean, and I am remiss to think of someone more eloquent on liberty than Ron Paul. Maybe the judge, but I don't know how old Andrew Napolitano is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Bob Shulls is in his mid-70s, so yes. And but he acts, I mean, when you talk to him or you're with him, I mean, he's as chipper as a 25-year-old, so he's
right
just
on.
He won't slow down. I love him.
So now we're going to get it. Now we're coming up. See, we've been babbling here, and we're going to come up to the bottom of the hour news. But now you had mentioned something, so give a little tease here about whether or not liberty is a myth.
There is no such thing as freedom, Allison.
That's kind of depressing, and it seems to be very contradictory to what we've been speaking of for the last half hour.
Well, I hope people tune back in to find out what I mean.
Absolutely. We are speaking with Raymond Powell of, are you now with startbutton.com? Is that your primary
Yes, project? Yes, ma'am. That's my web design company.
Excellent. And startbutton.com, are you also on Twitter, Facebook? What's the best way to follow you?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook / Razer 42, RAYZER 42.
Awesome. We're speaking with Ray Powell. We're going to be talking about the myth of freedom. Ray says there's no such thing as freedom. Maybe it's more cryptic than I'm thinking. But you're listening to the Allison Bricker Show here on Daily Paul Radio. We'll be right back after the bottom of the hour news.
WGRR Digital. Liberty Talk Radio.
What a bad time for a damn station ID. I was really digging Brett Denton there.
Oh, damn me it. Too. I was jamming over here.
Oh, I love me some Brett Denton, man. He's so excellent. He's always up and happy and really like to rock out like a total moron because I'm in my studio and no one's watching me, but it's fun anyway. So they always say,
"Doing the same." I have to admit.
Awesome.
Well, that's what I love about the few times I've heard your show here, Allison, and how much I've appreciated the work you're doing with Daily Paul Radio and everything. It's really upbeat and positive and energetic, and you know, it's a lot different than it's just the general vibe of what you're doing here is a lot different than what I recall from 4 or 5 years ago. It was a lot of anger and depression and sadness and fear about where everything was headed. I don't know whether that's just you being a really positive person or whether we've made a lot of accomplishments over the last 4 or 5 years. I actually feel it's the latter, but
absolutely. Well, you know, God bless Alex Jones for the work that he has done, but I remember myself listening in 2009 and just I couldn't do it after about 2 months. It was just I wanted to like hang myself every day after this because surely yeah. The end of the world was just around the corner, and I guess I got burnt out.
They're coming to kill us all right now.
Right, and I can only take so much of that. And instead, I wanted to focus, you know, like Dr. Paul, and I'm still nowhere near as awesome as he is. And I just hope that I can someday learn to control my snark. But he is such a Zen master, and all the stuff he's put up with, he always keeps a positive attitude. And so I try to do my best, and when I read around some of the news that the Liberty Movement has accomplished, it's really just amazing. I mean, we literally stopped the war in Syria. It's the nonstop talk about non-interventionism that helped persuade public opinion to be 92% against that war. And that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's more public activism in general has just been on the huge rise. I don't know what you call liberty, freedom, patriot movement anymore or what it is. I mean, I know I've kind of been in something called that for a long time, but there's so much activism happening in so many different areas with so many different labels, and the energy is growing. And it to me, the bottom line is that it's at the end of the day, it's about returning power to the people where it belongs.
Yeah, and that's really the exciting thing. And so I have to ask you that: how can you say that freedom is a myth?
Well, Allison, it doesn't exist, and it doesn't exist for a couple of reasons. First of all, and when I say that, I mean that this great, perfect ideal of freedom doesn't exist, and no perfect ideal exists in the universe. Nothing is perfect and exact. So, but I think it's important to clarify this. especially if you go around calling yourself a freedom or liberty activist, or you're in the freedom movement. This is an important topic and kind of important thing to think about. It doesn't exist in a couple of ways. First of all, you need the basics of life. You need food, you need shelter, you need, homeostasis. Okay, this is all like Maslow's laws, the first level. You need these things, these basic things for survival. If you are unable to get these things, you don't really have the freedom of leisure. You don't have the freedom to do what you want with your time. Your time is going to be 100% focused on getting these things. So that's the first level of the non-existence of freedom. The second level, I would say, is simply that every other human that you come in contact with, and I'd say let's start with physical contact with, that is, you are in a physical space with them, has the ability to prevent you from being free in the ways you might want at any given time. It doesn't matter who you are or how many guns you have or how smart you are or how slick you are at making an argument. There can be people around you that restrict your freedom in all kinds of various ways. It could be a physical restriction of I'd like to walk in that door right now, and they stand in your way and prevent you. It could be all these kind of other little restrictions of, well, they're not going to allow you to have fun. They're going to restrict your freedom to have fun right now because, well, they're mad at you for something, and they're going to find a way to make your life miserable right now. So all these little things are actually tell us that freedom is just a perfect ideal that we can think about. But let's get real about what it is.
Well, absolutely. I always say that before anything was actually – to me, like, the most important inventions in all of human history are music, airplanes, and indoor plumbing. But I think probably before those things could ever even be accomplished, somebody had to invent shoes. So to your first point of like, homeostasis and having, comfort and having necessities, boy, I tell you, yeah, you do have a point there. Now, what I don't understand the physical aspect, I can pretty much put out any troll. I can ignore them from the mental anguish standpoint. I could probably get my butt kicked by a lot of people, but I would hope that, some sort of firearm or my natural right to self-defense would be able to thwart their aggression.
Well, right, but even in the fact that you have to respond to their aggression restricts your freedom.
Only for the moment, though, right?
Until it may be a moment, but the point is that in my experience in experimenting with these things, this is a very difficult thing to achieve. And what I've found is that it's that this kind of human nature thing that's really instinctual in our social behavior, that if you find yourself in any way being perceived as somebody who is restricting another's freedom, that other will in turn instinctively work to restrict your freedom in return. And this is a concept that I think libertarians often find themselves
pettiness.
Falling into.
You're talking about pettiness and spitefulness.
It is fairly petty. It is not really a high-level functioning thought process. It is certainly not a spiritual-level thought process. This is like really low instinctual stuff that if you're just sitting in the room and this person is making you feel like you have less freedom, okay, you're going to respond to them in that way.
That makes sense. Okay. I understand that. I understand that idea.
Yeah, and I think so we talk about people just say the government is bad and the government is this and the government is that. Well, there's always some level of government no matter where you are. There's going to be some restrictions on your freedom unless you choose to be a hermit in the woods. And even then, you have Mother Nature who's going to restrict your freedom, not just through the availability of food and shelter and all those things, but through wildlife. In fact, other creatures of the world have the ability to restrict your freedom just the same by maybe eating you. So and other things.
That would be a really bad way to go out.
Yeah. So there is no such thing as this ultimate freedom. It just doesn't exist. It's a nice thing to strive for, but I think being clear about what it means is important. And I guess where it gets weird when you start talking about government is one of the concepts that I'm noticing is so you have this instinctual response mechanism that seems to be part of our social behavior. When your freedom is restricted by another individual that you can identify, you are going to retaliate immediately, okay? Almost everybody. Even if you're meek and mild, you're still going to have some form of retaliation. It may be passive aggressive. It may be gossiping about them behind their back. Whatever it is, you're going to have a response to somebody who you perceive as taking away your freedom. And you're ultimately going to be attempting, whether you realize it or not, to restrict their freedom, is my theory here. It gets really weird when you start talking about governments and these large social bodies, because what happens at some point is that there is somebody restricting your freedom and you don't know who they are.
Right. They just become a faceless bureaucrat of the institution.
Right. And so at this point, your social instincts have no place to go. Like, where do you direct your energy? Where do you direct your retaliation?
To Bitcoin.
This is the thing. Yeah, right. But this is the thing that spawns activism for those people who can kind of – I think what happens, Allison, when people get active – here's one of the parts of this whole theory here – are that when people decide to become activated and start making retaliatory measures against these unknown people, it is because they have personalized them. They have put a name or a face to them, whether it be the Rothschilds or the central bankers or President Obama or the right-wingers or the terrorists, whatever it may be. As soon as you personalize it, and you become activated to do something about it. Whereas a lot of people will just go through life knowing that there's this power, there's this thing out there restricting their freedom, and they have not been able to personalize it. And it's very easy for those people to become apathetic.
That makes sense. So is the action of nullifying the aggressor, is that my retaliatory reaction to suppress their freedom? But how does the state, in all capital letters, have any liberty unto itself? And am I wrong in trying to nullify every aspect that I can of government?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think the retaliatory measures that are instinctual within us are perfectly valid and good things. They can be petty if you're not able to be self-conscious about your actions, but that goes with anything you say or do, really. So yeah, I mean, try to be self-aware as much as you can, but to feel the need to be retaliatory against persons that you identify as trying to restrict your freedom is perfectly healthy and natural for the most part, as far as I can tell.
As long as it's concurrent with or in agreement with the NAP, with the non-aggression principle?
Well, okay, non-aggression in terms of physical. I mean, we can draw lines of law to say you don't have the right to take life, liberty, or property, or partial life by injury, right? These things make perfect sense in terms of developing law. But you know, when somebody, and this isn't a great example, but when somebody's just trying to have a good time and you don't want them to have a good time, you know, and you're responding in that way, that's something. That's something
right.
That you can't
yeah,
say.
Yeah, yeah. There are those, you know, those who like to poo-poo on everything. It's just
right.
They don't want you to have a good time either.
And maybe it's deserved, for all we know. I mean, there may be that you've made so many other people have a bad time that you actually have that karma coming to you. So who's to say whether that's right or wrong? I really don't know. But the thing to realize is at the end of the day, anybody and everybody that you come in contact with does have the ability to restrict your freedom in those little subtle ways. Is that aggression, though, I guess what I was trying to get to. Is that aggression when you take those kind of acts? I don't know.
That is a good question. Yeah, I don't have the answer for that either. I mean, I guess to the point where, yeah, that's an esoteric question to try to answer.
It really is, but these things go on in human nature and in every social interaction all the time. Which brings us back to like some of the things we were talking about earlier, where I have the intentional community where the goal is for there to be a board of people who operate through consensus. And so the idea with consensus is to be very super conscious of all these little things that you're feeling and doing about those around you. And if you can accomplish that, maybe you can achieve this kind of spiritual growth that's necessary to really open yourself and be honest with yourself and be honest with everybody within you and create that just kind of wonderful inherent, you know, ability to work together and always be looking out to increase other people's freedom at every step as well as your own. And if we can do that, we can kind of create this good, happy medium where everybody is on this just, you feel it in the air. You feel the energy in the room when you're in these kind of groups and these things are happening. You just feel this positive thing where everybody feels empowered and everybody feels like they have complete freedom of opportunity in their future.
So we should maybe not, so freedom is a myth, but we should still strive for freedom and try to expound and expand liberty in as much as our sphere of influence as possible. Is that a fair synopsis or a summation?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, part of, I guess, what this message is about is that if you're only going to focus on your own personal freedom, I think you're missing the picture. Until you focus on making sure that everybody you come in contact with has their own personal freedom, and you make it your job to do that, kind of. You kind of achieve that level of self-awareness. I think until we achieve that as a society, so you're looking out for everybody else's freedom, and of course, in turn, most of them are looking out for yours, and you don't have to worry about your own is the idea, right? And so it's this kind of this quasi, you know, individual collectivism or something weird, a brain twister or something, you know. But, you know, collectivism by definition, at least by certain definition, is involuntarily being forced to be.
Right. It's the whole notion of the involuntary. Like, you know what, if you want to be a voluntary communist, meaning if someone can come and someone can leave your commune, or you want to be a voluntary socialist, I mean, I have no problem. My only problem is that they're so concerned that with that notion of I've got to look out for everyone else that then they say, you know, we should get this centralized bureaucracy to make sure it's all fair and everyone has everything equally.
Right. And well, and the end result being that they use force to extract the fairness.
Right. Which then becomes totally unfair.
Exactly. And so we know that. We've studied these principles. But that does so when you cross that line, you are no longer looking out for other people's freedom. It has become some kind of vengeance or jealousy thing where you're in fact angry that you're investing and you think you're caring so much about everybody else. And maybe you're not looking out for yourself enough. And here you find out you don't have the things you need or you want, or you don't have the freedom you want. And now you want to be retaliatory about that. And now you're going to go out and demand that people give you the things. And so that doesn't work. You know, it's got to be, if you're doing things for others, no matter what it is, and you have any deep subconscious expectation of return for that, you're failing.
Wow. I would love to have you on to debate an objectivist because, like, remember, like, part of the Randian philosophy, Ayn Rand, that there is no such thing as altruism, that you should never worry about anyone else except for your own benefit. I think it would be an excellent discussion.
Oh, yeah, I eat their lunch all day long. But, I mean, no, I shouldn't be arrogant about it. I would love to debate an objectivist. But
yeah,
I mean,
well, they're tough. They can be really snotty.
I know they can. I've done it. But to me, what I found in my personal journey, which is, you know, a very long and dramatic story, of course, I found that at some point, I was heavily into activism. I was in the middle of running the radio stations and doing everything I could for Ron Paul and everything else. And one of the points I came to was kind of a spiritual revelation that had I been in a Christian church, I would have said I found Jesus or something. But, you know, I realized that it is completely selfish of me to help others because it feels good. It feels good to me to help other people. And when I realized that, I said, you know what? That is completely selfish. And therefore, it is completely in line with every principle I've ever stood up for.
Right on. So where are you politically at this point? Are you voting? Are you participating at all? Where do you consider yourself philosophically speaking? Anarchist? ANCAP? Minarchist?
Oh, I hate labels. I hate labels.
Right on.
I mean, I called myself a capital L libertarian for a while, then a lowercase. And when Bob Barr won the libertarian nomination in 2008, I could no longer call myself a capital L libertarian.
Right. I think that happened for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I called myself a little L for a while. And then I kept bumping into little L's who were just jerks. You know, I was going to use another word, but I'm
right. Well, no, thank you. We try to keep the airwaves clean.
Okay. Yeah. So I just met so many self-proclaimed little L libertarians who were just jerks. And I said, you know what? I don't want to be associated with that label either. I mean, and of course, I was the king jerk myself for a long, long time. So I'm not, you know, I'm not saying I'm better than any of that. I hope I'm a little better these days, but I've had my moments. And
right.
So,
yes. Yeah, we all have. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
It happens.
And so I don't do labels anymore. I don't know. I just don't even know how to answer the question of what am I. I don't.
Well, what do you think of the electoral process then?
In terms of voting, I think I feel some. I've had personal experience with my local county sheriff. I kind of feel that that's an important office, especially if you study the Sheriff Mack principles that he's
right
putting
on.
Forth.
Yeah, he's excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and I've spent lots of time. As a matter of fact, I'm going to meet with my county sheriff tomorrow. And God bless him for taking the time to sit down with me. I don't know why he does, but he does, and he takes some of those principles seriously. And so I helped him get elected, and I'm really glad I did. And I think it's an important office to be concerned about. I can't see myself, caring about what's happening much on the federal level, just because, as we talked about earlier, I guess I don't even recognize the authority of the federal government, really.
Right on.
I recognize I have to tolerate it to make my life easier from time to time, but
excellent. So Ray, what are you working on right now? What's the big project? Is it secretive still, or with Bob Schulz, or are you more focused on New Dawn?
Well, New Dawn Project is an ongoing concern. I've been at it for so long. I'm actually kind of stepping away from the property a little bit these days, but that shouldn't discourage anybody who's listening to get involved. NewDawnNM.org.
You got it. Well, we'll put a link up, because I'll put up this. These will be available on demand. Ray, we're coming up to the final segment, and so what's the best way to stay in touch? Are you Twitter or Facebook?
Facebook for sure. Raymond D. Powell. Razer 42, RAYZER 42.
Awesome. Well, Ray, thanks so much for coming on the show. I'll have this and the other interview with Howard Real posted to Daily Paul Radio. I look forward to having you back on, and much success for both StartButton.com and New Dawn.
Thank you so much, Allison. Thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun. We got to do it again.
Absolutely, we will. You take
care.
All
right. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was my interview with Mr. Raymond Powell. I will have both that interview and my interview with Howard Real from the first hour published over at dailypaulradio.com. You can check out the on-demand section. We have lots and lots of our hosts. They have shows up. You can download, subscribe, do whatever you want, share, embed. You're listening to the Allison Bricker Show. We'll be back for the final segment this evening. Got some good news, so stay tuned. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, for the final segment this evening of the Allison Bricker Show. I have some excellent news. We are well on our way to cross 1 million. That's my best Dr. Evil impression. 1 million visits to Daily Paul Radio. So thank all of you so much. Thank you for being loyal listeners to the station, for sharing this with your friends and family and fellow Liberty lovers. We're doing our very best. I do want to say that we're going to be releasing a 3-question survey this Friday. So if you would please consider going to dailypaulradio.com. I will also link it over to dailypaul.com. 3 easy questions. We want to get some feedback from our loads of listeners on ways to improve the content that we are delivering to you. As well as just, again, it's going to be 3 questions. It'll be short, sweet, simple. I hope you will take part in that survey. It means a lot. It'll help me manage the station better, because really the notion is to manage the station less, to kind of let this develop a little more organically, maybe not be so rigid. I can't give away too much. But tomorrow, make sure you tune in. Ben Swan will be joining me again. This is his second appearance on the Allison Bricker Show, which is pretty awesome. And don't forget Brian Hagan and Taryn Lupo. They are my new lead-in, and I love the audience that they have brought to Daily Paul. I love the brevity. I love back and forth. If you're a fan of that kind of radio where you've got 2 hosts just that really feed off of each other's energy and tell some pretty dang funny jokes, and they have a really good, positive outlook and a humorous take on liberty, make sure you tune in from that. They are 6 to 7, and then I'm 7 to 9 here on Daily Paul Radio. We broadcast on the same days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. But the stream is accessible 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Plus, we have the on-demand section, which I guess we have retitled to Archives. The archive section is what it's called now. But you can go there and download any of the Liberty Cats, Blue Republican. We have the Ron Paul interview with Alan Butler that was on. And we're always adding more content. We're going to be shuffling the schedule here with some pretty exciting news. In the I'm hoping in the next couple weeks, maybe sooner. Could be. So stay tuned. Up next is the Jeff Trubig Show. Thank you, guys and gals. for tuning in and being part of my audience. It means a lot to me. It's why I continue to do this. So we'll see you tomorrow. Remember, 7 p.m. Eastern, we'll have Ben Swan on tomorrow's show. We had to reschedule from last week. So stay tuned. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.